I want to know everything there is to know about you.
Now I'm going to introduce me.
You must have spotted her by now. She's always there.
Don't I deserve love?
Somebody has to like me best.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Don't Know Her podcast. I am Scott.
And I'm Michael.
And we are here once again to talk about someone from the world of film that we think deserves more love, more attention, more celebration. And whereas until this point we have always spoken about performers in film, as part of our current celebration of wonderful queer folks in cinema, we are finally turning our attention to a director. And Michael, please tell us who that director is.
We will be talking about Dee Rees, who is at the top of my list anyway of directors that I'm very excited about, but it is weird to me that she has not been given more opportunities than she has,
mm-hmm.
although we'll totally get into it because there's probably a specific reason why her career maybe has stopped at a certain point, which is her most recent film, The Last Thing He Wanted, which was pretty negatively received,
mm-hmm.
and
was.
Probably should have been a big contender in lots of different ways, even just for audiences, if not for awards. This $100 million film starring Anne Hathaway. But, you know, everyone has high points, low points. And I think the high points in Dee Rees' career are just so high. Like, I think she has given us two of the greatest films in the last 20 years.
Amazing.
Or American films. So, yes, I was very excited to turn our attention to a director.
Yeah, I'm very, very excited too. Even though of certainly the few that we're going to focus on, and she has not made too many feature films in her career thus far, I had actually only seen one, and it would have been, I guess, the most widely seen so far of her career, and that would be Mudbound, which came out a handful of years ago in 2017. It picked up Oscar nominations, so I guess that added to the amount of eyes that were on that film. It was a big release for Netflix at the time, and was very, very exciting, and I thought that film was very special. So that's the only one I'd seen thus far, so was certainly excited to explore the others. But you definitely have been the champion of talking about Dee. Where did it start for you?
I remember, you know, when it comes to, well, in this case, the London Film Festival, any film festival for film buffs, and you're like, this is the list of films I need to see in this festival. Pariah was the highest one on my list for that year in the London Film Festival. It had already screened at Sundance. It had a lot of positive reviews, but there was something about the trailer and the tone of the interviews with Dee Rees and about this coming out story which felt like it was more elevated, or like had progressed from maybe the sort of cliched stories we would get of young queer people, let alone queer black people. Like, you know, this spectrum is so wide for the sort of stories we could be getting and we don't.
Yeah.
You know, usually if you thought of a queer coming out story, it will be kind of a white man in a middle class family whose parents struggle with it but then accept him. Do you know?
Yeah.
That is, I assume, the kind of basic stereotype. And we have had plenty of those sorts of movies of all sorts of qualities. But Pariah is just such a wonderful film. And there was something about it that I thought, yes, this would be good. I saw it, loved it. You know, we'll talk more about Pariah and really encourage people to watch it. But from that moment on, I was like, this person is going to be so important to cinema because they are bringing something we don't have. A queer perspective and a sort of confidence in visual storytelling,
oh, yeah.
which is just wonderful. Like, from the very first moments of Pariah, you know, we see queer joy, you know, these two young women in a lesbian bar dancing, and then you see them on a bus and you see this transformation that the lead character has to go through to go home to their conservative family, where they become slightly more feminized. And it's just so beautifully told, and like, it's just so good. So yes, that's where I first saw the work of Dee Rees. And then to me, Mudbound just is another step up. Like, to me, Mudbound is an incredible American film, and it's a real, I hear what you're saying, it was celebrated, it is Oscar nominated, including for Dee Rees, for Best Adapted Screenplay. But that, you know, Spielberg had directed a movie as good as that in this stage of his career, he'd be winning an Oscar.
Yeah, I think that's very fair.
But, you know, there at the time when Mudbound comes out as well, we have to remind ourselves, like, you know, not many women had been nominated for Best Director. And I know where it seems at the moment, like, women being nominated for Oscars, for Best Director in particular, is more common. But there's still a largely, you know, male, largely white institution. So something like Mudbound, which is very thorough in terms of reflecting on American history, they probably don't want to encourage celebrating that. Even though it did a little bit, but it could have done way more. Like, it was hard to ignore, which is why it gets its nominations.
Yes, agreed. It was hard to ignore. It was positioned well in its festival run. It was received incredibly well, deservedly. It then did, of course, pick up that much recognition. But I agree, I think, celebrated, sure, in the context of her career. However, yes, I think you're right that had it have been in the hands of a more familiar or perhaps white male director, it would have been far more celebrated, which is not fair. And part of the frustration which drives us talking about an incredibly talented person like Dee on this podcast.
Exactly. And what about her work do you think is, you know, specific to her, or, you know, makes you interested in seeing a Dee Rees movie?
So now, off the back of seeing more after Mudbound, I think regardless of how perhaps successful overall a film is, you can feel her ambition, which I think you've already kind of touched on. You can feel her ambition in scope, in artistic choices to kind of bring the piece more to life than it may have been in other hands. I get a good sense from watching the films that she's an incredibly collaborative director, because it feels like her films are the sum of their parts in an important way, but you can feel the drive and the ambitious eye working hard behind it to keep it elevated the whole way. I think her films are elevated even when, like we've mentioned, there are less successful entries in her filmography. So I would now be keen to watch anything she does, whether it's successful or not, because it will be ambitious and she will be taking a swing. And I appreciate that way more than people playing things safe and it just being forgettable. Mm. I don't think any of her films that we're going to talk about are forgettable.
No. Anne Hathaway waltzing around with scarves, different scarves, or do you call them scarves, like shawl sort of things around her body? You totally wouldn't forget that from the last thing he heard of us. Or last thing he heard of us? The last thing he wanted.
It might be the last thing you hear from us.
Oh, God, don't jinx. Don't jinx it. Yeah, I totally agree. We'll get into it, but she somehow finds really interesting ways to tell stories that are often familiar to us. And yeah, if they're not familiar, that's even more exciting, because she's quite, I guess, specific in the story she tells. And that's where her strength comes in, when she is looking at these details, I think.
Yeah, for sure. I think she's also at her strongest, when also there is what feels to be, and maybe I'm making an assumption here, but what feels to be a personal angle on things too. Mm-hmm. I think when there's a story to tell. But actually, this goes for all of them, really. She obviously feels that there's value in these stories to tell, and you feel her driving it with a personal angle on the material, and you can feel that coming through, which creates a great deal of character, within the film itself. I think all of them kind of are, yeah, really, there's something in them all that should grab any viewer, for sure, whether it's the Hathaway shawls or otherwise.
Yeah. Shall I get stuck into it then?
Mm-hmm.
So Dee Reese was born on the 7th of February, 1966, in Nashville, Tennessee. Her father was a police officer and her mother a scientist. Very interesting.
Yeah, okay.
She attended local schools and went to college at Florida A&M University. She graduates from business school and does a whole load of jobs, it seems, very much focused on, you know, as a salesperson, marketing and brand management. But it was through this work that she gets to work on an advert for a client, and she acknowledges this interest in filmmaking. Thank God. Thank God. It was for, I have written the word down, but it's autocorrected in an odd way. But like shoes that are good for your...
Orthopedic
shoes. So thank God for orthopedic shoes. I'll happily buy a very expensive pair.
Yeah, my goodness.
Just
absolutely.
To say thank you, Eric D.
Yeah.
So this leads her to pursue a film career, and she goes to the New York University's Tisch School of the Arts. It seems like a really fruitful time, as she gets to meet none other than Spike Lee, who is a professor of hers and becomes her mentor.
Oh, yeah. Gosh, I didn't know that. Okay.
So she actually works on Inside Man at this time.
Oh.
And, of course, during this period, she is developing Pariah.
Ah.
And actually, her thesis is the first act of Pariah, which she's made into a short film, which you can watch a lot of it actually online, and it is so striking how it resembles the final film. But also, it's really beautiful in its own way, and there's also differences that are really interesting, like the central friendship is still there between the main character and her out, very comfortable friend, and the mother. Like, they're that dynamic, and the mother who's very conservative. Anyway, really wonderful. And the short does go around to 40 film festivals around the world, collecting many awards, including the Audience Award at the LA Film Festival. She then goes on to make what is her first feature-length film, which is a documentary, Eventual Salvation, in 2008. Sadly, I couldn't even find a trailer of this, but the film follows her American-born 80-year-old grandmother as she returns to Liberia to rebuild her home and community.
Oh, wow. God, that's so awful that it's not... You can't find that.
Yeah, so, you know, I Googled it and it comes up on Mubi, but then it's not on Mubi anymore.
Right.
So,
yeah.
You know, the movie gods will give it to us in some shape or other.
The movie gods, come on.
Movie gods, yeah. This is followed by a really terrific short film that you can find online called Colonial Gods, which is this really great, like, half-an-hour film that follows a complicated friendship between a young Somalian person who's just arrived and living with a Nigerian man, and how, you know, their friendship with the background of gentrification and displacement in this, like, small immigrant community in Cardiff. It's just sort of like perfect, in terms of storytelling, a perfect combination of different elements that explodes into like an everyday occurrence you can imagine in the kind of fucked up, you know, world we live in the UK in particular.
All this housing estate was originally on the other side of town.
Where the rich people live.
Uh-huh. After the mines closed, they realized the land was too valuable. So they moved us here to the bay.
It's like watching something slowly unravel, and at the end you're like, wow, I'm left with this overwhelming sense of responsibility, guilt, nourishment, because you're learning. Anyway, it's kind of what you want to get out of a film, and she achieves that in 30 minutes beautifully. So we do then, eventually in 2011, get Pariah. the feature-length film. It premieres at the 2011 Sundance Film Festival. It goes on to really establish her as a very exciting filmmaker. It wins the John Cassavetes Award at the Independent Spirit Awards. It wins the Gotham Independent Film Award for Breakthrough Director. She wins outstanding. The film wins Outstanding Independent Motion Picture at the NAACP Image Awards, and also Outstanding Film Limited Release in the GLAAD Media Awards. So Pariah, as I've alluded to already, follows the story of Lee, played by Edeparu Oduye. We meet her, which this is the bit where I'm like, yes, this film is great. She is not coming out to herself. She is comfortable with her sexuality. So the film is about her, this very, you know, confident young woman who, you know, embraces her sexuality and enjoys it and has enjoyed, like, experimenting with it and seeing the boundaries of what she's interested in and fitting into the day-to-day normal world, which includes her mother, who is very conservative.
And I thought you said you were ready.
I am ready.
You're not going to church in that.
What's wrong with this?
Where's that blouse I bought you?
What's wrong with this? That!
Do what your mom says.
Are you hungry? Here, let me heat this up for you.
That's okay.
Oh, it tastes so much
better. Just leave it.
Leave
me out of it.
Now go get changed.
Dad, what's wrong with this outfit?
Nothing.
See?
I'm not gonna argue with you.
Do what she says.
Dad.
Ngawa.
And put on a skirt.
And in many ways, can be seen as a stereotype of, you know, she's angry with her husband.
Yeah.
She's, you know, annoyed with her daughter. She wants to conform. But I think Dee Rees does a beautiful job of expanding that character to be way more, while I wouldn't say sympathetic, but you can empathise with her more. And I should say the actor playing that part is Kim Wayans of the Wayans dynasty.
Oh, really? Is it? Yeah. Okay. I wouldn't have clocked that. That's fascinating.
Yeah, terrific. She's not in the short film, The Mother. But anyway, so it's really about their journey about, like, how do we find a way to make the most out of life? Do you know, it's not like most of these coming out films where it's like, wow, how am I going to come out? Or any, it's just about this character being confident with themselves and continuing to be so, and the world around them opening up.
Yeah, it's, yes, I think you're right. I think I maybe felt more of the sort of her feeling the oppression of close-mindedness suffocating or kind of dampening that, but yes, in her own moments, embracing it and being with a group of friends who very much allow her to be herself and celebrate in their sexuality and their identity quite specifically as young black lesbian women, I think. And ultimately, I think that's what I found most interesting in the film. I found it incredibly illuminating to a culture or a subculture I'm really unfamiliar with. And I could sense that this was personal. It was known. This environment in this world felt known because it had details which felt too specific to have been, you know, conjured up out of nowhere. Details like going out with a strap on, for example, yeah, as part of the night. And I was like, gosh, I would have never even thought that that was a thing. How interesting. And the kind of voyage to lose virginity with, you know, armed with that. So I really respected having a story told in front of me that was a new world for me to see, to be honest. And I found it incredibly rewarding and I'm very grateful for that. It's really stunning. It's, like I said earlier, like, it's kind of the sum of a lot of great parts, and it is shot so beautifully. The lighting is wonderful. The use of colour and space is so terrific. The way the camera kind of lingers on her and the other players in the film feels very intimate and personal and knowing and comforting. You sort of feel like there's the eye of someone who knows this girl following her, and I think that's what makes it probably feel like how you're describing it, of kind of bringing out the sort of confidence or, you know, self-belief that is in there, is that the behind the lens you feel a friendly eye kind of watching over her. Mm. It's really startlingly good. And Adepero Udie feels amazing. She's amazing in this and really, really brings this character incredible depth, even in quiet moments, because she's ultimately a fairly quiet character compared to some of those around her. She seems to be quite a reflective soul, and she does an amazing job at that. So, gosh, I was really, really taken with it. It was beautiful. Everything about it was incredibly striking to me, and I was so glad to have had the opportunity to watch something which I found to be so fresh, and maybe also sad that it's so fresh as well, though. So, yeah, Pariah, to me, wonderful. So glad to have got the chance.
It is wild. I hadn't really thought about that because it has been, 12 years now?
Yeah.
And you would hope that we would have way more stories. Like, we don't have many mainstream queer black female-led stories. Like, Watermelon Woman is the only one that jumps out to mind, and that's also a huge gap between that and Pariah.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's others I'm maybe forgetting, but to particularly contemporary stories like that, it is wonderful. And just want to say, it's Bradford Young is the cinematographer, who I agree, it is the most gorgeous of films.
It's so good.
And just going back to the strap-on thing, I just think that's a really great example that, you know, this prop essentially, or this device, because it is something totally new to us as cis men, the idea of bringing, you know, a strap-on to a club and helps, you know, to get laid. But there's still something really relatable about it, because there's this anxiety, this excitement. There's also this whole thing that, you know, it like happens before Lee goes out, where she's getting ready with the strap on and her sister walks in, and it's a very awkward, relatably so, exchange.
Mm.
I'm telling you got that.
You can't tell.
I'm telling.
Shut up.
Gosh, it looks nasty.
See, I told you so.
Yeah, whatever. Where's my makeup case? I know you got it.
We've all been there, if we have siblings or anyone that we shared rooms with at teenage years, of you don't have your own space to explore yourself, but now, you know, you suddenly have other people crashing it. And I think it's really striking. I think that's a really wonderful thing to achieve. And I think a thing that Dee Reeves does well, and does it in all of her films, but I think it's particularly striking here, is being able to not put shame in the easiest place that would be for a story. So it'd be very easy in a story like this to put the main character, Lee, who is, you know, homosexual in a heteronormative world, the shame should be directed all the time at this character, and that would help propel the story and make the, you know, the antagonist more evil and the protagonist more sympathetic. Instead, firstly, Lee is just an average sort of person in terms of they are not more likable than other people. They do behave in ways that you may not enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
And equally so, if the parents, say, who are the main antagonists, particularly the mother, you know, they have shame, and you have a sense that they feel shame, not for their daughter, but for their own actions. You know, for the dad, who is not committed to his family. He certainly has another lover, at least somewhere else. And the mother, who's hiding behind, you know, the heteronormative norms that she is tied to.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's something that really does work really well when Dee Reeves is on fire, is this sort of understanding of dynamics between characters.
Yeah. It's interesting you would say that she was mentored by Spike Lee. I think you can perhaps feel that in some of the intimate moments of the film, certainly the more humorous moments of the film. I mean, this is definitely her own thing and her own voice, but you can get a sense that, you know, there might be some similarities between moments in his quieter films, I'd say, perhaps, and this. It's very special.
So Pariah, as you mentioned, did very well at awards. In fact, Meryl Streep gives it a shout out when she wins Best Actress at the Golden Globes.
Yeah, that's right. Yes, of course.
Which is really fun. Because this was, you know, it comes up all every so many years about Oscars so wide.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no female directors, etc., etc. All very important, of course. At this time, we had The Help, you know, leading the charge in terms of a backstory at the Oscars. Now, The Help, for those who do not know, is can be seen, and I wouldn't argue with them, as a white savior movie. It does have a leading performance by Viola Davis in kind of what's made her famous, and Octavia Spencer also was made famous for these films and have gone on to being able to do lots of other things. But there was loads of conversations like, why are we celebrating a story like The Help when we have a film like Pariah that equally could be getting all the nominations that The Help is, and is a way more exciting film, and is the reason simply because The Help is a story of black people in the past told through white characters' eyes, and Pariah is a contemporary story where white people do not feature. That's a really interesting thing, but at the time, of course, I was like, oh, I just wish both films, if they want to be celebrated, can both be in it, that it's not either or. But like in hindsight, I find it really more annoying that Pariah couldn't just be celebrated full stop. You know, like I'm all for like pitting things together, but Pariah just deserves to be better represented than simply as like, this is better than The Help.
Yeah, agreed. I think it is as simple as that. Yeah.
But I'm being very simplified now because I enjoy The Help and I love Pariah. And I think there's space for all sorts of movies. I think that's more the problem.
Sure.
Dee Rees, you know, as I mentioned earlier, would have been waiting for the next movie. It doesn't come on a big screen. It comes on a small screen with Queen Latifah, no less, as Bessie Smith in, you wouldn't believe it, Bessie.
Dun, dun, dun.
The HBO TV movie, from 2015, which focuses on Bessie Smith's transformation as a struggling young singer into the Empress of the Blues.
Ooh, that is a really nice little rundown. Fabulous.
Really celebrated. So it won 4 Primetime Emmy Awards, including Outstanding Television Movie. And of course, Dee was nominated for Outstanding Directing and Outstanding Writing. So are you give us a rundown of the story of Bessie Smith as told by Bessie. As told by Dee.
So we find Bessie in, I guess it would be the 1920s. We encounter Bessie, I think in the 1920s or 1930s. And quite early on, we see her going to see Ma Rainey in a kind of touring show. And she breaks into, I guess, Ma Rainey's touring. Is that a train? Is that what it was?
Oh my God, it's so wonderful. I'd want to be a singer if I could get a train like that.
Yeah, it's great. And anyway, Ma Rainey ends up taking Bessie under her wing. She lets her sing with her. We see them kind of enjoying the stage together. But then in a moment, as Bessie sort of feels the love moving more in her direction on one evening, tensions flare up, and then kind of Bessie is kicked out of Ma's Black Bottom show and is then having to sort of pursue a career of her own, helped out along the way by a variety of individuals. She makes it very, very successful. And then, maybe inevitably in so many stories like this, sadly, we also see kind of the fall when she sort of hits those highs as well.
And I had watched it before, but had very little memory of it, apart from remembering really enjoying Monique as Ma Rainey.
Oh my God, yeah.
And how flirty Queen Latifah is, which yeah. I really love those. And I still think that's my highlight of the film. I think it's not really surprising that maybe I didn't remember it much more, because in so many ways, it's very straightforward sort of biopic. it's way more televisual than any, like Pariah, for instance, sure. Or Mudbound.
Yes.
But still, it's an educational film with some really lovely moments, and we see, particularly when, you know, Queen Latifah is, you know, when she's casting with her lover, and she's, like, trying to find out, like, information about the people she's interviewing or casting. Like, I love that sort of tone and dynamic. And also Monique, I do think Monique is particularly brilliant in it, in a way that I'm not sure how Viola Davis got to play Ma Rainey when Monique was right there.
Yeah.
I like Viola Davis in Ma Rainey's Black Bottom a lot, but I feel like that's a performance in a theatrical way, whereas Monique does it in a more naturally fitting way.
What you grinning about, Blue Goose? What you know about it?
Same thing you know.
What's your name, pretty lady?
Bessie Smith.
Miss Bessie Smith.
But yeah, and Queen Latifah having a gay old time.
Yeah.
Emphasis on gay.
Yeah. But isn't that magical to see? I mean, one of few, if not the only time we've seen, I guess Chicago is also certainly treading that line, but kind of openly queer that we get to see Queen Latifah play. And as soon as that kind of clicked into place for me, I was like, oh, great, okay, we are going to get such an interesting story here. She is terrific in it too. She's giving it a lot of strength. I think the character of Bessie Smith is that she's an incredibly resilient individual, and Queen Latifah plays that so well. And we see moments in the film where that's really brought to life in some kind of great sort of showpiece moments for Queen Latifah, and I think she certainly deserved her Emmy nomination. Mm. She sadly didn't win, however, she lost to Frances McDormand in Olive Kitteridge, and I would challenge people to find better performances on television than that. So, unfortunately, I think she went up against the best, but she's doing amazing things. The film, it does move towards conventional biopic terrain, but that initial sequences with Ma Rainey on the tour feel again so alive and colourful and exciting and characterful, and you see the kind of quirks and intriguing elements of these characters, especially Monique's Ma Rainey. I think she is the standout. And it's really wonderful to be there on the ride for a while and on that train and on that journey and at these shows. And in those bits, it kind of feels like, to compare it to Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, what the trailer was kind of suggesting of Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. I think they both have a similar feeling in that there was something more exciting in each of them to portray. But in here, it starts off so I think it's really exciting, and that's where you get Dee doing that again at her best, pulling life into something which otherwise feels kind of staid and known and too familiar from a film like this. But in those moments where it's doing that, it is really great. And then from there, like you said, it's a story, and it's something that's important to hear, and it's a story that is worthwhile and important to be told. So I'm glad to have watched it despite some of those conventional trappings.
Yeah, one thing I really liked about it, before moving on, is Queen Latifah is showing so many shades of one person's sexuality, and I don't think we get to see that in characters enough.
Agreed.
And if we do with men, like, for instance, you know, who I'm thinking of, which isn't quite right, but, like, Jude Law and Miss Ripley, that is attractive to everyone, but Queen Latifah's, like, you know, sleeping with all sorts of people, enters a room and is sexually charged because she's in it. She is playing a character or type of person who does exist in real life. There's plenty of people I would know. That's awkward. Should I make a list? No, but do you know what I mean? Like, people are just, you know, so attractive in some way, but also have loads of different layers to them, loads of different ways of presenting themselves, and that they want to be seen and they find attractive, do you know? And she is delivering that in different scenes, and it's believable in one character. And I think, I can only think that kind that comes from queer people telling queer stories.
Yeah, I agree. And that is, again, what elevates it. Yeah, I completely echo that point. I hadn't really thought about that, but you're right. It is an excitingly unusual portrayal of sexuality on screen. So that's great. And that's a great reason to watch it.
Yeah. Queenie Tifa being hot.
Yeah, there we go, behind it.
Which, again, you could watch Chicago or Girls Trip or whatever. So, soon after Bessie, well, 2 years after, we get Mudbound, which Dee co-writes with Virgil Williams, and it's an adaptation from a book by Hilary Jordan. It is shown at the Sundance Film Festival, and it becomes the highest purchase of that festival, being bought by 12.5 million by Netflix. Which is a big deal. And I remember, well, because I was excited about Dee Reeves, I remembered that being shared. I was like, this movie is going to be so good. The film tells the story of two families in the Mississippi Delta in the 1940s. It's about race, gender, society, land, capitalism, hope, family. It's about so many things. And the main conflict is between this white middle-class family who arrive to take ownership of land that a black family already live on and have a more genuine connection to. Now, the both families can live together because, you know, the black family rent the land. But there is a real tension between them, particularly because the white family have a father who, you know, is the worst of the worst of all the races you can imagine.
Yes.
And on top of all of this, both families have a member who has fought in the Second World War. And at the start, they're at war. And then when they come back, they're struggling with life in their day to day. I should say it stars Jason Clarke, Carey Mulligan, Jonathan Banks, Rob Morgan, Mary J. Blige, and Garrett Hedlund. Is that how you say his name?
Garrett Hedlund.
Yeah. So, what do you think of Mudbound?
I think it is terrific. And actually, as I hear you talk about it, it makes me think even more and more of it and elements that I didn't really think about and the parallels of these worlds, which shouldn't be in such conflict, but of course at that time they were, and in the case portrayed here in such a heartbreaking, devastating and awful way, especially in moments towards the end of the film, for sure. The performances in this film across the board are sensational. Everyone is brilliant in this film, but Rob Morgan particularly and Mary J. Blige for me really stand out as the parents of that family.
We pay rent, work our crop for us, that's it. They can't just pick us or set us down like we do.
You the one always talking about saving. I own and I own parts are the only way to get up from under their foot. We right there.
I don't want you working for them.
I won't be working for them. I'll be working for us.
In a way that they are seared into my head, if I was to kind of maybe not remember elements of this film or have bits kind of fade, as things do when there's time between watching films, they will stay very, very clearly in my head. I think everyone is working at the top of their game, and it does feel so rich. It feels incredibly layered. It feels thoughtful. It feels lived in. The title feels so apt. You can kind of feel the muddiness of the situation, the atmosphere, the stickiness, the heat, being bound to the mud. It all just seems to work. It feels like the creation of incredibly intelligent people doing fantastic storytelling. And again, the ambition shines through. There's use of narration in the film and different characters talking in this like they're reciting beautiful poetry or prose, and it flows over the film with this incredible music. It feels like a great artistic achievement, and it should have been more recognised than it already was, even as perhaps one of her, if not the most recognised or certainly familiar of the entries, like I've said. The rhythm of it all is so engaging. It just works so well. And I think, again, it has similarities or, you know, shares kinship with similar films of that nature, but it's doing something fresh once again, so it stands out and brings about, therefore, something new and exciting, as Dee Reese does so well.
Yeah, I agree with everything you've said. I also think it feels very contemporary.
Definitely, yeah.
In a way that I don't think you would expect from the trailers or imagery, in that, you know, conflicts between people based on sexuality, gender, race, are as intense as in this scenario sometimes, and a sense of, you know, fear propelling people to make decisions and behave in certain ways, which just seems inhuman. And I think that's why the film has such a, like, works so well, like, it has such an impact. But I think it's absolutely wonderful. I also think, you know, as someone who's been brought up on a farm, the idea of land, like, I know land is a thing, and like, I think of Gone with the Wind, land was talked about a lot, and blah, 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 blah. There's lots of films about it. But here, it's not this sort of, like, not tangible thing. Like, this is something, you know, that they want, but also are suffering because of. It's as if they're beholden to this land. And the land is also the country, you know, and is also their family. And also, they get a lot of, you know, life out of it. So it's really gorgeous. I've seen this film a lot. And the more I watch it, the more I'm like, yes. Like, as you say, there's these layers. It's like, yes, I get this from it. This time, the moment that really struck to me, there's two, but the relationship between Mary J. Blige and Carey Mulligan. So Carey Mulligan has young children, and Mary J. Blige was a midwife, and they need her in the house. And there's this really delicately portrayed change in dynamics between these characters, because they need Mary J. Blige, but they also aren't really asking. Do you know, like, Mary J. Blige has to do it, and then Mary J. Blige, that causes her to reflect when she was young, and she thinks of her mother and leaving her to help a white woman. And you just think, yeah, like, this is such a special moment in a film where you open a door to a character in such a huge way, but also to a theme.
Yeah.
It's absolutely wonderful. So, yeah, Rob, Mary J. Blige is, well, she's Oscar nominated twice for this film, because she's nominated for writing a song, and she's also nominated for Best Supporting Actress. And Rob Morgan truly deserved to be nominated alongside her. I would argue Carey Mulligan. I think Carey Mulligan's performance is really special.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. There's so much people. Rachel Morrison,
yes,
also being the first female cinematographer to be nominated, very, very rightly. Again,
she should have won.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. An incredible contribution, which further bringing something so full of life further to life. Amazing work of so many amazing people. And it shows, once again, just top of their game stuff. And one that really ought to be watched as well. Yeah.
And that is on Netflix, easy to watch.
There we
go. Another two stats that I find wild to do with Oscars and Mudbound is, firstly, Mary J. Blige became the first person to be nominated for Best Original Song and an acting award in the same year for Mudbound.
Really? She was the first?
I believe so.
Yeah, okay.
But then, do you know who the second was? Lady Gaga, who then goes on to win Best Original Song. And, you know, if she had campaigned in a certain way, could have easily won Best Actress.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which I find wild. The other stat, which is less fun, is that Dee Reese is the first African-American woman to be nominated for Best Adapted Screenplay.
Yeah, that feels bizarre to me.
That does feel bizarre. And I mean, maybe it's been a few years, but maybe that, you know, maybe that has changed. Probably hasn't. That is a wild stat to me.
Yeah.
So anyway, Mudbound, for so many reasons, would highly recommend it. And also, I couldn't decide whether Garrett Hedlund was attractive or not to me.
Oh, interesting. He's attractive.
He's an attractive man.
Yeah.
He's very old school in terms of his looks.
Yeah, that's actually... Yeah. He's like a classic Hollywood star in appearance.
Very good in film. So, at this time, we also get Dee Reese directing individual episodes of When We Rise, which, do you know what this is? I watched an episode, I'd never heard of it before, but it's a docu-series which tells the story of gay rights in America, essentially.
Yes, I have heard of it. I feel like this is available somewhere, and I keep just scrolling
Plus,
past it. Is it? Okay.
So Dee only directs two episodes. I watched one of her episodes, and it focused on San Francisco and lesbians and gays getting together to support Harvey Milk and Harvey Milk's assassination. I will say, if we say Bessie Smith's story, if we say Bessie is by the numbers, like this feels very by the numbers.
Yeah. Oh, I see, okay.
But also at this time, she's also directing an episode of the Philip K. Dick adaptation of Electric Dreams on Amazon.
Right.
Which I can't speak to because I didn't watch her episode of that.
Mm.
But I will assume it's good. So the next film project Dee is directing and writing with Mark Philibeault. I don't know why that is confusing me when it's so clear when I say it slowly. Which she's co-writing with Mark Philibeault is The Last Thing He Wanted. It's adapted from a Joan Didion book.
Mm-hmm.
And the story in a nutshell, because it's very straightforward.
It's so straightforward. It's the most straightforward film I've ever seen.
Isabel Elena, I don't know why I'm giggling because it's quite a serious story. It's a serious story about a reporter for the Washington Post who quits her job covering the 1984 United States presidential election to care for her father. But in a twist you wouldn't have seen coming, she inherits his position. She takes over his position as an arms dealer for the US government in Central America. Of course, Elena is the wickedly talented Anne Hathaway.
Yeah.
Her father is Willem Dafoe. You've got Rosie Perez in there. You've got Ben Affleck in there. It's a story and a half. I've not read the book. Have you?
No, I haven't.
And the film I watched, of course I did, even though the reviews and everything were not very positive. I watched it when it came out.
Yeah.
I did not like it.
Oh.
It would be the thing. What? And to be honest, I really... yeah, that will surprise absolutely nobody. So I think a lot of what makes Dee Reese's work special is missing from this movie.
Oh.
I think... Do you know what I put it down to?
Ben Affleck.
I think the casting isn't great. I think Willem Dafoe, I think Anne Hathaway are not only are they miscast, but they're also like miscostumed, miss hair and makeup. Like Anne Hathaway is, you know that you have someone who's like clearly a movie star.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, oh, I need to be a bit dowdy. So she puts on a scarf. She puts on, you know, it looks like she's putting on bad skin makeup.
Okay.
Like her hair is, you know, purposely not brushed a certain way. Do you know the sort of... like, and when you're supposed to be like a very genuine sort of thriller, it doesn't quite work. Willem Dafoe coming in this, you know, crazy stuff. The story beats. It's just all over the place. You know, that sequence where Anne Hathaway, like, she's like, I'm a reporter. I'm going to have to, you know, bust some balls. And then she meets her dad and she's the exposition happening in that sequence. Like,
let me fill you in. How do I manage? Let's see. Well, first I managed to graduate high school after you walked out of mom 20 years ago. Then I managed to stay at UNLV as long as I could afford it, seeing as how my long-lost father wouldn't tell me what to list as his profession on the financial aid application. What was it you told me when I finally tracked you down? Import, export? No. Supply chain. Let's see what else. Oh, I managed to have a kid of my own. And I still know her, too. So that's an achievement.
The most surprising beat happens is, like, this man is actually has some medical condition because he can't remember anything. So I'm like, why were we spending time with Anne Hathaway saying that? Like, we're not meant to feel guilty. I just don't get it. Mm. It just is a bit all over the place is my main thing. And I'm not that interested in the story.
Okay.
But I hope she got a good chunk of that $100 million.
Yeah, budget. I hope so. I felt like it would be right up my street. Even with the negative reviews, I was like, oh, well, I mean, it's sort of Dee Reese doing political thriller. You know, maybe it could be akin to other things I've liked in the past. I will say that, no, I didn't too much like it either. However, I maybe feel a little bit more warm on some elements. I think Anne Hathaway is actually pretty good.
Do you?
Yeah, I do. I think she's...
What about visually?
Misplaced. That's what I'm trying to get at. There is something about her which doesn't quite feel right, but I think she's doing well with the material. It is exposition heavy in the moment you're talking about, but I maybe do admire its then quick turn away from exposition after that and quite boldly charging through this incredibly complex material to a point you're like, oh, maybe I'm into the fact you're just throwing me into it and I'm supposed to follow along. But it kind of starts to lose what in that moment feels quite like an intellectual choice and allows the film to be quite an intellectual piece, but then starts kind of barreling towards murkiness, which you just kind of get lost in. And I then started to wonder, like, is this intentional or are we just trying to cloud a lack of aim? I don't know. There's something about it where I... even after it and kind of being like, I don't really fully know what happened and all of that, even though I was watching pretty engaged and I wasn't allowing myself to be distracted by, like, my phone or anything, which you could if you were getting bored by a film. But I was kind of still fascinated by it and left sort of convinced that there is something better there than my experience of it or everyone's experience of it. I don't know, but I don't know if that was just the makings of a film that was trying to outsmart me. And I do feel quite allergic to films that try and outsmart the audience or make you feel like you're lost and it doesn't kind of merit that position to put its audience in. But it's also so many characters coming in and out of it. Are there red herrings or are they just needless people kind of drifting in and out to kind of confuse things? It all then just starts to really run together after this kind of initial, say, 20 minutes. And therefore, it does feel quite at odds with the other films that we've had from Dee, which is such a shame. However, I can feel the ambition in this film still. It's clearly very ambitious. And... for that reason, I'm not upset that I've seen it. And it's not even that I wouldn't recommend it to people either. I certainly wouldn't direct people to it, first of all. I think if you want to be a completist, there's not many things that you have to watch. There's really interesting stuff in here. There's amazing shots in here which will stick in my head because of the content and the camera work. But sure, it's a film that is confusing and confused, I think, at the same time.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think you're giving a lot more credit for, like, being ahead of the audience. And I mean that in a... because I agree with what you're saying. It's beautifully shot, it's ambitious. There's some exciting moments. Like, when Anne Hathaway is trying to get money for her you know, guns or weapons, she... That is an exciting few minutes.
Very exciting. There are many moments which are very exciting, actually, yeah.
So I don't disagree. I just think, because we know that, well, I believe we know how Netflix works. Like, they don't really interfere. There's a part of me that thinks, you know, that sort of thing, if we'd seen that with a studio, we'd have been like, oh, that's studio notes.
Yeah.
Whereas this is like, this just doesn't work so well. But... It is a shame. I remember it being a big disappointment because there was such excitement for the cast, for this adaptation, for Dee Rees. And it just didn't, just for whatever reason, so maybe I'm being harsher on it, but I feel like it's constructive criticism in a way.
Sure,
you know, like,
sure.
Because a part of me is like, I don't, like, what if somebody that wasn't a movie star looks-wise, you know, like, it's just so glamorous, I think, is my thing with Anne Hathaway. Like, my favorite Anne Hathaway parts are whether it's theatrically, you know, de-glamming her, like Les Mis, because that's like, we know she's beautiful and just wipe her face with a baby wipe, she'd be fine. And, or playing up to the movie star thing, like the Ocean's 8 character.
Yeah, okay.
I think the only time where it kind of works is Rachel getting married, but I don't know now, maybe I'm just an old grumpy old man now, older man, where I was like, she's just put on a wig that looks a bit dodgy and like really bad makeup, and we're supposed to assume this a beautiful woman looks exactly like everyone else. But anyway, I maybe one day I'll rewatch it for a third time or a second time, watch it for the third time. But we'll see.
We'll see.
At the time though, because clearly, you know, people were excited for Dee Rees, they were announcing things left, right and centre.
Yeah.
So we've not heard anything about these films since The Last Thing He Wanted. That's what it's called, right?
Yeah.
What's the name of that Amanda Seyfried horror movie, The Last Thing He Saw or something?
Oh, I don't know.
Anyway, sorry. But I keep, that's, when I hear that title, it's like I'm thinking of the Amanda Seyfried movie. Anyway, it was announced that Dee Rees was going to do a musical film called The Kid's Exquisite Follies.
Whoa.
And also it was announced around that time she was going to do a new film adaptation of Porgy and Bess.
Yeah, wow.
We've seen nothing of those since. And maybe COVID happened. But, you know, like if, you know, $100 million is a lot to put in a movie. And who knows? Well, and this is, everyone has lows in their careers. And really, she deserves all the opportunities. And now she has gone on to direct episodes of Space Force. I never saw it. The Netflix Steve Carell Star Trek spoof sort of thing.
No, I have not seen it either.
Saint X, and there's an Apple TV show coming up called Masters of the Air, which she is directing some of those episodes.
Oh, okay, good. Well, that's a very high profile. That's like a Steven Spielberg produced Band of Brothers type thing, yeah.
And she's also executive produced a recent documentary about Little Richard called Little Richard, I Am Everything. So that is Dee Rees' career so far. She's still in her 40s, young. We have so much more that I assume we're going to get from Dee. I think it's incredibly important. I just think people should go and watch these movies.
Yeah, 100%. I would say watch them all, but like, you absolutely should watch Pariah and Mudbound if you haven't already. You should make sure you watch them. They're both incredibly rewarding films for different reasons, but for the same reason, being Dee Rees. So you got to do it.
And have you thought about what you'd want her to be working on, or the type of things, or the type of people she'd be working with?
So this I actually find harder to answer than usual, maybe just because it's the first time we are doing a director rather than a performer, where you can kind of imagine someone in a situation and around them it could be whatever. So I'm not sure I can answer specifically, and I'm going to kind of give a twofold answer. So this is the biggest kind of cop-out ever, but hopefully it still kind of makes sense. So I love when she's bringing something more personal, and I think that sort of happened with Pariah, and I would love to see her do something that feels kind of known, lived in, personal again. And there's moments in Pariah where we feel like there's the beginnings of a really beautiful romance story that's going to happen. I think Dee Rees would bring a really beautiful and exciting and tender and sexy and romantic film about young women falling in love. And I would love to see that. And I think she would be the perfect person to bring a story like that, or more stories like that, into cinemas. Saying that, however, I don't want to make it that it's like, but then disregard where she has been more ambitious and perhaps failed, because I would say that I want to see Dee do anything. So I would say, yeah, throw 100 mil at her again and let her have another go and let's see what she does next, because I do admire the going for it attitude and the sense of kind of ambition and scope and how she's evolved between these films in her kind of director journey. So for me, it's kind of anything and everything, but more personal, but also grandly ambitious. I want to see more of that and continue to work with exciting performers who illuminate these terrific worlds. So basically, it's like, sign me up for anything, but let's get scope and also not kind of shut her down, especially as a black woman working in film, because her last film wasn't the success we all wanted it to be. Many straight white male directors have very easily bounced out of situations where they have made lesser films. So let's not have this happen to her.
Yeah, like Rob Marshall made 9 and he could still make movies. What's his name? Tom Hooper.
Yes,
has made Cats, and he's certainly going to be back.
Yeah, exactly.
Making some dry, so, boring thing.
So true. So very, very true.
So I had 2 ideas for Dee Reese. One, because I thought it would be exciting to see her reunite with Queen Latifah and to make some sort of queer story with her in the center, a contemporary sort of story. I guess the same as you're saying, but older. Do you know, watching the new Sex and the City reboot and watching Miranda's character explore their sexuality in such a terribly but entertainingly written way.
I've seen moments, yes.
Like, Che is a character that defies logic. But so does Miranda now.
Yeah.
But anyway, I want a proper, genuine story told that way. Something like, you know, something of the tone of The Last of Us episode with Nick Offerman and Murray Bartlett. Oh my God, I would love to have seen Murray Melvin in it. Oh my God, Murray Bartlett. And
anyway, it's so funny. Oh God.
I'd like to see, like, Murray Melvin would be perfect in The Last of Us.
Absolutely.
Oh. And yeah, I would love to see that. So that's my first thing. And the second one is, because Dee clearly is interested in making a musical, because the 2 films that had been announced in pre-production were musicals, I'd love to see a film adaptation of A Strange Loop, which is the Broadway musical by Michael R. Jackson, which follows a young black man, queer black man, as he tries to write a musical about a young black fat man.
Sorry.
No, the way it's important in the story.
Oh, is that okay? Sorry.
I don't know why you're laughing at me. Why are you laughing at me?
I thought you just changed one of the adjectives.
I probably did.
Well,
he's always, like, he is a fat, black, gay man.
There we go.
Every
Wonderful.
Time.
Love that.
And then he's writing a story about this, and then the story he's writing within the musical is the same character.
Right. Got you.
But, you know, he has these demons, you might call them, but, like, things in his head, which are the, you know, the Greek chorus. It's a really wonderfully layered, exciting piece of theatre, and I think it could translate well to film if it's done sooner rather than later. It's the sort of thing that will age, perhaps, just because of its reference to technology.
Okay.
Or maybe it won't. Maybe it will.
Hopefully not.
Maybe it's whatever. But I also think Dee would bring out such interesting dynamics, because there's just so much going on in that film.
Cool.
And this would be a visual treat. So, yeah, they're my 2 wishes. And to reunite with Anne Hathaway.
Okay. I don't think you mean that, but I'll take it.
No, I do. I think Anne Hathaway and her could make something great together.
Yes, 100%.
I love Anne Hathaway. I feel like it comes out.
I know. Sometimes the way you talk about people on here, Michael, it does seem to be very, very
I really do
spirited.
I love her. And I can't wait to see her Michaela Cole co-starring film that's coming out in like 3 years' time.
Well, same.
Anyway, sorry. Tangent. I've tried to get on a tangent with Anne Hathaway like 5 times this episode. She's just so alluring to me. She's like a siren.
Yeah, it's what she is.
And still I dream.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Well, thank you, Scott. Where can people find us if they want to, you know, have a sidebar with me about Anne Hathaway?
You can find us outside Dee's home playing Please, Please Make More. But also on social media, you can find us on Instagram and, for the meantime, Twitter, but who the fuck knows what's going on there.
I've not set up a thread.
So maybe, depending on how things go, maybe they're too soon. But at the moment, Instagram and Twitter, at @don'tknowher_pod. And then you could also email us, should you wish, at don'tknowherpod@gmail.com.
Yes, and please do rate, review us. That really helps people find us. And yeah, please watch movies.
Please watch
all
movies.
All sorts of movies.
Yeah.
With or without Anne Hathaway.
But definitely the ones by Dee Reese.
Yeah, Pariah, Mudbound in particular. Yes. Absolute gems of films.
Do it.
Well, thank you, Scott.
Thank you.
And thank you, Dee.
Thank you, Dee.
And thank you, listeners. Until next time, bye.
Goodbye.